What's up, everybody? DJ Bucky here from Move the Sticks. Before you get to your episode today, here's what's coming up on our latest episode.
DJ and I are going to break down what to look for in each preseason game, give you some nuggets that could help you, maybe even in your fantasy league.
Doesn't matter which team you like, we will discuss them on the latest Move the Sticks episode. You can download it on iTunes. You can check us out on YouTube as well as NFL.com/podcast.
Going to the hurry up offense.
Hi and hello, football fans, and welcome to the David Amashek Football Program. As always, presented by McDonald's. Go get some of those delicious new chicken McNuggets, 100% all-white meat, no preservatives, no artificial colors, so on and so forth. I had some. You can watch me eat them if you need visual evidence of this. Me, Akbar Baja Biamila, and 20 chicken McNuggets jumped into my car, and we drove to the Coliseum to watch the L.A. Rams practice pro football. You may have watched them on Hard Knocks earlier this week. And yes, you can watch that. Bartlett behind the glass. Where can everybody watch that? It's a whole video show for the DDFP video consumer. Where can we see that, Bartlett?
That's going to be on NFL.com. NFL.com.
It's a good website.
I've heard of that. Yeah, I've heard of NFL.com. All right, let's jump into it. But yes, it's a full-on. Akbar and I go through South Central. We play football on the streets of South Central. That was fun. Then we go for the main event. We talk to Jared Goff. We catch up with one Maurice Jones-Drew, the new radio voice of the L.A. Rams. We kibitz with some fans. It's great fun, all on video on a glorious Southern California sunny afternoon. Check that out if you would. Nay, I demand you check it out, or shame the devil. All right, let's talk about football and otherwise. Joining me in Studio 66, before we bring in Jonah Carey, one of our oldest and dearest friends, for an extended conversation, two other pals, Handsome Hank and Patrick Claibon.
Thank you.
Yeah, we appreciate it.
Do we want to play Handsome's intro?
No.
I'm sorry. We're pacing it up here. It is the hurry up. You're right about that. How are we, fellas?
Couldn't be better.
Do you feel that? I mean, my trip to the Coliseum, legitimately, you know, round about start August, you start to feel football and you start hearing all the talk and you start to get excited. But really, I had a visceral good feeling when I was standing on the sidelines on that grass watching the football. It was really neat. I almost got run over.
Almost would have been great if you'd like invited one of us or both of us. Then we would have had that really great visceral feeling. But no, I'm not feeling that at the moment because I wasn't invited. Were you?
I was not invited either, no. But I can't be mad because you Dave has things to do. But speaking of the
important visceral, friends to hang out with.
The visceral feeling, because people always ask, because working in football for so long, it's like, oh, are you excited the season's about to start? Like, are you ready to get back into work? And the analogy I like to use is like sharks swimming. Like, sharks swim and they eat, and it's time for us to eat.
I was worried for a second there you were going to do one of the things I like the least in people who do what we do,
right,
which is complain about football.
Absolutely not.
And I'm seeing people,
the season's here.
Better take one last little trip here, little with the missus, because then it's gonna be
gonna
be hell.
You're not gonna hear that from either of us. That's why we're here.
You understand? You talk about football
right.
For a
living.
Nobody, at no point are you gonna be asked to pick anything heavy up.
Right.
You know, so you're just talking about football, fella. Don't expect me to feel for you. Handsome. Before we talk a little bit of football here. You saw the new Bourne movie. No one loved those Bourne or the Bourne trilogy. The other one with Jeremy Renner was not even bad. That one was pretty good. Give me a quick review on the new Bourne picture.
Okay, very quick. It's funny you mentioned the Jeremy Renner one because clearly Matt Damon's not a fan of that movie because they do not pick up. That never happened. So we joined Jason Bourne. His life has gone awry badly. He is now fights Algerians on the border in a dusty town, turns up in a van, and his new life is he's fighting Algerian muscle men with one punch and then the fight's over. That's how low he's sunk in the world. But Jeremy Renner was like a sign, you know, he had everything going for him. Life was good for him. So they put that aside. But I don't know, still don't know how Bourne sunk to these lows. It's like he's an intelligent man. You'd think he'd be able to find other work beyond punching muscle men.
It's what he knows.
It's what he knows, right? But it didn't make any sense to me. Anyway, it was like they took. I'm a huge fan of the original Bournes. It's like they took all of that stuff and just made a sort of YouTube supercut. It was the camera didn't stop moving for 2 hours. My eyes literally were bleeding by the end.
Even if you bring Matt Damon back and Paul Greengrass, yeah, who directed the latter two.
He directs this one.
Right, I know. It seems like, well, they should work, except that story specifically.
So there's two
where
issues.
Where would you possibly advance?
Right.
He's still upset.
Well, now I don't know. There was no story, so I can't comment on that. But
it's a theme in a lot of movies, right, here recently.
Taken exists.
Really, your child has
again?
Been kidnapped again. At this point, it seems like it's your fault. The other thing, I definitely think that Jason Bourne, I think it would be fun for him to take a page out of Bond's book. So still have all those quick cut fights, but then look knowingly at the camera and deliver a very bad cliched line. Like, oh, he choked. I just think that would be fun. I think it would be so incongruous for Jason Bourne's.
Bourne was such a revelation when he made the scene, whatever it was. I think it was like 15 years ago, yeah, which was. is sad to remember. He was, we've talked about it here on the DDFP. I think Bourne would win if you did a fight of all the movie characters in history, and no guns allowed, but you could use other weapons, but no guns. I think he would beat all Claybon. How say you?
We've had this discussion, and I think if I remember correctly, it centered on whether or not Drago's enhanced nature made him ineligible.
Drago?
Yeah.
Drago. Drago, you mean the pugilist who was felled by Balboa in Moscow under the watchful eye of Gorbachev,
yes,
who flipped on him? I still blame Gorbachev and the gathered crowd there in Moscow. They have that fight on Christmas Day. They all gather to watch their national hero defeat the Red, White, and Blues. You would think he was going to be the meat that he was going to beat up, just like he did Creed. He took Creed's life.
Right.
In an exhibition.
Right.
Creed shows up for an exhibition. He's a man of 72 years old, and Drago kills him. Balboa is crossed. So he goes,
years.
Well, maybe. But either way, Balboa goes out to fight him in Moscow, and halfway through the fight, the locals, the countrymen, flip on Drago and start cheering for Balboa. I'd be upset, too. I wouldn't be able to focus on anything. Handsome, I listened to our recent podcast earlier this week that we did with Ike Taylor. I encourage all listeners to go back and listen to that one. Nay, I demand it because it was highly entertaining. I thought we got into some great stuff. Ike told some great training camp stories.
He really did.
And I give you,
Handsome,
you made at minimum two really fascinating points along the way.
Did I?
Yeah, that's right.
At minimum.
You did.
That's amazing. I think that's a good day for me.
No, it was very good. Don't be silly modest. But yeah, that was very good stuff. So go
Can
back.
Can you remind me what they were?
You made one great point about RG3. You made you shared some thoughts. Off the top of my head, I can't summon what they were, but they
Not
were
that
like,
good. But
no, they were really good. And in fact, you know, I maybe no spoiler alert. How about that, Hanson? Yeah. Maybe I'm being a great showman.
Okay.
And I want people to listen to the podcast.
Yeah, you should listen to that for my great
Go subscribe to it. Why don't you? Download it, make a comment, do all that jazz. I was on earlier this week with Adam Carolla, who was filling in for Dan Patrick on the Dan Patrick Show, and we were talking about the Olympics and the weird events, and it's weird, and I realize it's a myopic American point of view. But isn't it weird that the rest of the world plays these games that we have no idea what they are as Americans? Wouldn't you think with all our channels and everything, we would know every sport known to man? And yet there's this glorious game, Team Handball. And it occurred to me watching it that we could, if we put our best athletes in the, you know what Team Handball is, where they run, you know, with the weird rules? It actually seems like it has no rules other than throw this ball that's about the size of a softball into a soccer goal. But otherwise, they just hit each other indiscriminately and dribble it randomly. I feel like if we sent the NFL's best, if Cam Newton decided he wanted to play Team Handball, he would, on day one, be the greatest player in the history of the sport. True or false, Handsome?
I mean, I can't say I've watched enough Team Handball to know, but I would guess that yes, I would get. I mean, he's one of the world's best athletes. It wouldn't be a surprise for him to fit right in there.
I'm gonna give him more than a couple of days. I'm not gonna
instantly
dump
on
the entire institution of handball and say he would instantly be the best. But I think he would have a pretty good chance of being.
Let's say he would have the best arm in the history of the sport, and he's probably bigger or as big as anybody who's ever played, and he's probably as fast. He would immediately like, what are the rules? Never mind. I'll score. I already scored 4 goals while you were answering that question.
It'd be something interesting to see. But you mentioned that we don't know a lot about these sports. Some of them, I don't think other countries really know that much about either. I think they're kind of globally obscure.
Yeah.
Maybe I'm just assuming that that the rest of the world is off practicing these games while we focus in on our big 4 or 5.
It'd be cool to have like a primetime Olympics, because a lot of these, like the Olympics is fine, and I'm not going to sit here and take a dump on the institution of the Olympics. But a lot of it, like you say, is things that I don't care about in the 4 years in between, and really don't particularly care during this 2 or 3 weeks. But it would be fun to have like a primetime, like, you know, you have all the sort of 8 or 9 global major sports being played at one time in one place by their countries. That could be cool.
What wouldn't be fun about that is NBC would play it at 3 o'clock
Nine
in the morning
later
here
after
on the West
happened,
Coast,
right.
and we'd already know what was going to happen, and there'd be literally no explanation.
I've seen you being pretty vociferous about this on Twitter. A friend of mine last year, or last time the Olympics was on, made the same point. He's a pretty well-known journalist internationally. He was based here at the time. He got...
He's anxious to drop the name, but he doesn't want to.
No. Well, his name is Guy Adams, if you want to know. He got banned. NBC had Twitter remove his Twitter account, like block his Twitter account so that he couldn't access it, because NBC was so angry about the fact that he complained about the time shifting of the thing. So just be careful.
I hope I don't get in trouble for saying sports should be live on television.
Yeah, exactly.
I always say about the Olympics, they are sports television for non-sports fans.
Right.
They're produced completely differently. I do want to talk about Hard Knocks. Speaking of sports programming, let's get into it. Start the show!
Damashek Football Program, available on iTunes and at davedamashek.nfl.com. Now here's your host, Dave Damashek.
Yes, hi and hello, and welcome to the DDFP, again presented by McDonald's. And again, we appreciate you subscribing, downloading, commenting. And on this day, go to NFL.com/podcasts and track down the full video show of our time at the Coliseum with Jared Goff, Maurice Jones-Drew, and the rest. Good times over there. Patrick Claibon. Follow him at Patrick Claibon NFL?
No, just straight up name.
And at NFL UK Hank. And before we get to our pal, Jonah Carey, who you know from MLB Network and beyond, doing a lot of great work there over the last decade since he first came into our lives and we fell very much in love, we'll have a rangy conversation there. Real quick, fellas, Hard Knocks debuted earlier this week. Oh, excuse us, handsome. We got a phone call there.
I am sorry.
Who is it, Guy Adams?
No.
World-famous journalist?
No.
No? All right. Claibon, what were your takeaways from the premiere of Hard Knocks?
I'm hoping we get a little bit more. There wasn't a lot going on, but I feel like something is. Something is coming. That there's more excitement brewing. It was good to see the names and faces we know. And I'm hoping that we get some of those, like a Charles James character, you know, so those guys that we haven't quite seen yet.
I talked to one of the producers from films when I was at the Coliseum, and I said, man, you must be bummed that Chris Long is now on the Patriots, because he's one of the most entertaining guys in the NFL. Handsome, what were your takeaways from the premiere?
Well, Dave, I could do what Patrick did and pretend I watched it but didn't. But I watched Jason Bourne last night, so Patrick, I'm sorry for exposing
you. No, it's cool. I like being dimed out.
That was embarrassing, Claibon. Why would you do that? I thought you understood no jive. What do you get about the no jive policy?
No, Dave, I said I'd like to see more.
You know what?
It's a good
technically,
didn't lie.
You didn't lie.
Oh,
you're right.
So I'll try it.
Well done.
Let me give it a go. I mean, I thought that it was fun seeing the Rams now based in Los Angeles. I think I like to see how they have really acclimatized to their new situation and surroundings. And I was excited to see some of the big name guys that we wanted to see on the television for the Los Angeles Rams. I thought that was
my biggest takeaway.
It's on my DVR right now. I had to stay up late to finally see the gymnastics that happened 9 hours before that. So
that was actually well played there. You could say something like, "Hey, NFL Films.
They did it again.
They always do great work, don't they? They just really do great work."
See, I'm just trying to maintain my employment, and I didn't want to admit to not consuming our products.
That's something that if you're a newcomer to LA, and you know there are a lot of people out here who are in the entertainment industry, and they will solicit your opinion of stuff of their latest work. You go see them play, do an improv class. You know, people at mid 20s guys, a lot of people. You have to, "Hey, come see me do stand-up. Hey, will you give a look at my little short here? Will you read this spec script or whatever?" The answers, you have to get those down because you don't want to fracture relationships over your disapproval of their work. You landed on that one. Ask me how I liked your script there.
Hey, Dave, I wrote something. You remember I sent it to you a couple weeks ago?
Yeah, what can I say? You've done it again.
That's how you say it. What if it was my first ever script?
Hey, you know what you could really see coming through there? It seemed like you had a lot of fun doing this. Yeah. That's the other one.
I see you in this. Yeah. Or I look at this, I see you.
Yeah. Those both work. Here's the one legitimate football, or I don't know if it's legitimate, but I wonder.
No spoilers here.
Actually, from a human side of things, as it affects the football decisions. If you're Jeff Fisher, and for that matter, Les Snead, you draft Jared Goff first overall. This is the conversation of the offseason. Now it's starting to feel like, and even if you didn't see Hard Knocks, at least Case Keenum's going to start the first game of the season. And by the way, if you start Jared Goff, as I talked with him about when we kibitzed, the first game of his career that counts at least could be played on his home soil in the Bay Area against the 49ers. That's a lot of weight to put on the kid's shoulders, I feel like. But if you're Jeff Fisher, after 20 years, and you're, you know, these desperate football fans here in L.A., we want the Rams back, and we're going to be handed Case Keenum? Doesn't that feel bad as a fan? But if you're Jeff Fisher, don't you almost have to, given the rhetoric that fans all say about, you know, 8-8 and all that, don't you have to try to start your best potential, the guy with the higher ceiling out of the gate, right?
Which is Case Keenum, right?
Is
now.
It?
Sounds like. I mean, it sounds like at the moment the guy who is, and this is you hear it from in the quotes from all the Rams players, like Case Keenum is streets ahead of Jared Goff in terms of running that offense. And to your point,
but if he can beat him out early in the 21st century, that's bad, isn't it?
Not necessarily.
Not necessarily. I mean, there was a point where they've been pretty consistent all offseason. I get it. There's a lot of
But everybody does that same dance about like, "Oh, we're going to let them learn at the knee of the veteran," and then the kid always ends up starting.
Case Keenum isn't a terrible, terrible quarterback. There are a lot worse options out there than Case Keenum.
Name one. Name one who's starting.
Mark Sanchez.
I'm not talking about a bum third string guy.
Trevor Siemian and Mark Sanchez.
Both
of them together. The two-headed monster that the Broncos are planning on starting at quarterback this year.
Clayton, how say you?
I think it's philosophy-wise, it depends on if Jeff Fisher is one of those people that believes if you play a quarterback too early, you can somehow ruin them. Like, there's this alternate universe where Aaron Rodgers played early, and somehow in 2016 he's not good now.
Right.
Which I don't personally believe that, but I'm not a coach. I don't know if it actually matters. But I'm with Hank. If Jared Goff can't quite run the offense and make it work, like, don't waste a season of Todd Gurley.
Well, you're not going to have.
Yeah, but I don't.
Yeah,
I don't,
he doesn't. Fisher and Snead don't have the season to waste. Is the point.
That's exactly my point. Jeff Fisher is on the. If they go 8-8 again, I think he's out. I think he's done. So wouldn't you definitely start the guy that? Forget it. Week one doesn't matter. I mean, he's not in the business of making memories for Jared Goff. Oh, it's, well, you're playing in your hometown. That'll never happen again. They're going to go do that again. I'm pretty sure about
it's
that.
It's funny because a lot of people said, though, that the Snead-Fisher regime made the quarterback pick there because it extends their time there than it just, well, we got this kid.
I don't know if Stan Kroenke is necessarily going to be like, okay, well, yeah, all right, fine, you go for it. They play the 49ers, and the 49ers are going to be a bad team this year. If you're Jeff Fisher and you're looking to just pick up wins, he just needs to accumulate enough wins to probably get to 9 and keep his job. You take that win with whoever is most likely to get you the win. Somewhere down the line, Jared Goff's going to start games. But I don't think it needs to be in week one.
The one thing I give Jeff Fisher credit for, and
I feel course, like that might have been another good point.
That was a sound Thanks, point, man. And I Very think good. Also Thanks, that that's another conversation is who would be the better option there, Gabbard or Kaepernick. And just like we talked about RG3 on the earlier show this week, it is just hard to fathom how good that guy was and where he is now battling it out with Blaine Gabbard. If you fell into a 3-year coma and just woke up, you would not believe.
Right.
Oh, did you hear? Yeah, 40. Well, we'll see if Cap can beat out Blaine Gabbard. Wait, what? What happened to Blaine Gabbard?
Yeah.
He's in San Francisco, but Kaepernick can't beat him out?
Exactly.
Didn't they? When I fell into my coma, they got rid of Alex Smith so that Cap would be the revelation that he has been. When I fell asleep,
right.
Taking him to the Super
Jim
Bowl.
Jim Harbaugh loves him. News for you on that one as well.
Coma man, there's a lot that's happening.
Jim Harbaugh's chasing the it used to be the Big Ten, but now there are 14 teams. What?
What happened? But don't worry, Chip Kelly's on top.
But they still
Chip
call
Kelly?
It, well, why would they still call it the Big Ten? That doesn't make any sense. How many teams are in this thing? It's very confusing, but the one thing I tip my hat to Jeff Fisher on is that he kept that mustache. He stood by it in spite of changing fashion trends and follicle trends for fellas. He held on to that mustache like grim death, and now it has bridged into the return of mustaches. See, that's what you get. If you stand by your guns, now the likes of Sully behind the glass there, 23-year-old hipster guy, he now wears a mustache.
Wait, Sully's
just like Jeff Fisher.
Is Sully a hipster?
No, I don't think you can call anybody who wears a shirt, a button-down shirt that is vented in the back to keep him cool he doesn't sweat.
Right. What I like most about Sully is he's not a hipster. He's doing
no,
that.
You're right.
That's just his look.
Wait, Sully wants you to get it correct. He's not 23. He's 25.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Okay.
Very good.
Weathered.
And also, he is still, just to repeat, he is wearing a button-down shirt that is vented in the back so that it keeps him cool so he doesn't get too sweaty.
He's going fishing. He's going fishing later on the lake.
But he does have a Jeff Fisher mustache going for him. So, hello, hipster. That's good news. All right, listen. Patrick Claibon, Handsome Hank, what a pleasure to see you both.
What, we're not allowed to stick around while you're with your pal.
No, I'd like you to clear out.
Okay. Yeah,
you know, guilt always, by association always that, and all yeah. that kind of stuff.
We understand.
Good stuff. And here he comes, everybody. One of our oldest pals in the world of podcasting and beyond. Here he comes. It's Jonah Carey.
Dave Damashek.
Well, this is a grand time for me here in Studio 66. He used to visit us via the telephone when we were doing a podcast elsewhere. Well, in fact, every stop I've made, I've always made it a point to track this guy down. He's one of the great talkers. In fact, you can experience that yourself by listening to his eponymous podcast. You see him making pages at CBS. You see him talking on MLB Network. He's all over. He's a book writer of great repute. He is one of our very oldest pals, Jonah Carey.
Oh, extended version.
Extended cut. Hold on, I'm listening to his intro. The great, the incomparable Dick Banks, the one-man house band with that number, one of the most popular from his canon of songs, Jonah Carey. What's the poop, fella?
To this day, that intro is much more popular than my actual show or me. That show, when I joined Grantland, they asked me to do a podcast, and I went to Rich, and I said, hey, can I have the song? He said, sure. Is there anything I could do for you? He said, you know, just promote it or whatever. Are you sure? Like, can I take you out for a steak? Nope, that's all you need. Grantland, I took it there. Now the podcast is on the Nerdist Network, and there's been new audiences. Grantland was a new audience. Nerdist is a totally new audience. And they said, listen to this show. That guy's okay, but man, that is the best song of all time, and I will never get it out of my head. It is the biggest earworm of all time, in a good way.
It really is, and Jonah Carey, he's a smarter version of me, but the reason that we connect is that he and I both had – I mean, some people might call it a bad habit, like Emma VP behind the glass would consider this a bad habit, but we both have a sad predilection to get off the rails a little bit and start talking about 138 different things besides the subject that we were supposed mm-hmm. to be talking about. And this is where we first fell in love, was kibitzing. Oh, Jonah, come on my podcast. Well, it'll be a 10-minute thing, and an hour and 20 minutes later, we would wrap the conversation of the best kinds of cheese to put on your turkey sandwich and stuff like that.
The correct answer is turkey is an inferior meat. I wouldn't bother with cheese because I wouldn't eat a turkey sandwich.
Right out of the gate, I don't like that opinion at all. I like what's nice is more and more you can find not the junk turkey that you get that your mom made when you were going to school. Now you can get like Thanksgiving turkey. That's what I call it. Thanksgiving style turkey.
I don't like white meat because it's too dry. If you put dark meat in a sandwich, I'd be fine, but at that point I would just eat a drumstick.
What about pork?
Pork's okay. I like the whole banh mi phenomenon that now it's mainstream. Sign me up for that. Pork banh mi, amazing.
Well, see, now I've won you over.
Yeah.
Half a point to
two Jews
there.
Talking about pork.
To start things off here, and there's a lot to kibitz about here, and like you say, MLB Network is where you can track them down among many other places. Here's something I want. Let's jump to.
By the way, I'm going to have something to break to you about MLB Network coming up next week. I could do it right now if you want.
All right, go ahead and do it.
Next Wednesday. The Pirates are playing the San Francisco Giants, so it's Wednesday the 17th. I will be calling that game.
No way!
With Brian Kenny and John Smoltz and a dude named Mike Petriello, who's great, who works for MLB and is very statistically oriented. It is called SaberCast, and it's going to be a statistically focused broadcast. Smoltz is Smoltz, obviously, but we'll be able to weave all that stuff in, and it won't be like hitting you with number. It'll just be context or whatever. I'm super excited about it. And it's the Pittsburgh Pirates of all teams.
As you should be, and mazel tov to you.
Thank you.
We'll have some time to buzz about them, Buccos, the state of the Bucks in 2016. A little bit of a step back. But listen, we don't have to talk about that. Let's talk about a couple things. Over the weekend, the Hall of Fame in Canton cancels its game. So that was a bit of a black eye, obviously, for the NFL, for the state of the field and everything else. Ultimately, the right decision there. But Hall of Fame in the news for that reason. And then the conversation, do we have to go through this again, whether or not A-Rod deserves to be in the Hall of Fame because he's pseudo-retired now, or the Yankees did the solid of retiring him for him? Either way, here's my idea, Jonah.
Yes.
And then we can talk about it if we have to go down the path of A-Rod's, whether or not he deserves it or not. And the answer is yes, of course he does. You agree with that, right?
Yeah, of course.
In fact, I saw your tweet the other day that you said, like, oh, well, Mickey Mantle and his amphetamines should...
Willie Mays, Hank Aaron, everybody. Everybody looks for an edge in every sport.
Babe Ruth didn't play anybody other than white Americans.
And there wasn't even scouting. So it was like, you would be on the field and be like, oh, you're white. You might be able to play second base. We're just going to make you second baseman.
Also, by the way, on his list of, on his resume, I wonder if he includes it. But Jonah and I, about 5-6 years ago, went to the farmer's market here in Los Angeles, the permanent farmer's market.
I think it was 7 years. I think it was 2009.
Was that long ago?
I think so.
We sat there over afternoon beers, and I offered him a trade. I offered to trade him a guy from the Pirates for, I think, somebody maybe on the Montreal Alouettes or something like that. I don't remember because he's a Montreal native. And from that was born the League of Leagues. It would be great if you, instead of being a GM of one team, you were the GM for all that city sports teams. And so then we created off of that. What if we did a fantasy league off of that? And several years later, it took a lot for us to get together, but our pal Toby Mergler really did all the nuts and bolts of, I don't even know, building computer programs and such. That's beyond me. But anyway, he built the program, and now we have the League of Leagues. It's NFL, it's MLB, it's NBA, all three leagues, and you can trade between the leagues. Mm-hmm. It's great fun, although there are some issues with it, and we should talk about those as well.
Yes.
Anywho, So League of Leagues, and in fact, we just did a little NFL supplemental draft in which I acquired Theo Riddick and other exciting news.
Zach Ertz. I had $1. Nobody bid. I bid $1 for Zach Ertz. I had no tight end. Nobody wanted to outbid me.
Ertz.
Zach Ertz.
You got Ertz.
The Truth Ertz. That's my new name on my fantasy team.
Oh.
I love the puns.
Yeah, you do. Anybody who follows you on Twitter who's willing to survive will find some actually good tweets.
Listen, my dad and 140,000 bots follow me on Twitter. That's how it is.
So here's the idea. We now need, I feel, it's, you know, these halls of fame, yep. There's been too much, you know, there's too much moralizing. And, you know, like you say, Mickey Mantle was, used amphetamines and what, you know, all
Taylor Perry, spitball,
all those different things. So it's this hit and miss sort of morality that's applied. Not to mention guys like Terrell Owens isn't in the Hall of Fame because guys didn't like him, because voters didn't like him.
That's crazy.
He wasn't nice to them, and so they didn't give him their vote. I say we just leave all the Halls of Fame. Let's move them up to Mount Pius where they belong and start anew, and let's be agnostic about the sport. And let's leave the moralizing to the people up on Mount Pius and just evaluate who the best are. Hall of Fame, maybe Hall for All, we call it. I don't know what. We'll figure out a name for it. Jonah Carey.
Yes.
Who is in the first class if we do a North American?
Every sport?
North American.
The Big Four. Hockey, too.
Yeah.
Okay.
Hot golf.
Oh, I'm doing
anything.
Golf.
Anything.
Any North American sport.
Yeah. Do we make it for the globe? Although that'll be a disconnect for Americans and people.
You know,
like,
I couldn't.
Biopic Americans won't like it.
Yeah. Okay. Let's stick to America. So what do we want? The inner circle is 10, 20?
Let's say in our first group, we'll induct. What if we did it in groups of six? Who would be in the inaugural class? I'll tell you two to get you.
Go.
Well, you know the obvious two.
Yeah.
If you think about it for any amount of time, Michael Jordan has to go in, and Muhammad Ali has to go in.
Okay. Already, we got a hockey problem.
Yes.
The hockey problem, which you and I have discussed many times, which is that Gretzky and Lemieux are both superlative in every way. Do we leave one of them out? I think that if you want to stick to one per sport, you have to make the most agonizing of decisions. So we're going to table that for 1 second.
Let's set aside the 99 v 66.
I don't love the fact that Babe Ruth played before integration. I believe that today's players are much better, but he was also the dominant or one of the dominant pitchers of his time. Mm. That's the only thing that's said, because I'm inclined to say that Barry Bonds may be the best hitter of all time, but because he was such a good pitcher, I'm okay with Babe Ruth. And he's also, there's a certain amount of Ruthian stuff to Babe Ruth. So that's fine. So Gretzky and Ali and Ruth, I'm okay with that.
Wait a second. Now 99's in all of a sudden when you sneak 99 past me.
No, Jordan and Ali and
don't play games with me, Carey. I'm tuned in today, fellas.
Listen, Gaston Gingras is in my Hall of Fame. okay, so Ali, Jordan, and Ruth.
So we're putting Ruth in. I think it would make a good statement for what this Hall of All is about.
Yeah.
Is I think if you put Barry Bonds in, I think that lets everybody know what the score is. I'm not voting for
him.
I'm just saying, but you know, is Barry Bonds? I can't. Barry Bonds to me is there's just not ever been an equal to that. As much as I loved watching Griffey play, and Ricky Henderson was special, and Clayton Kershaw and Randy Johnson for that 5-year window and everything else, but the Bonds thing was crazy. I mean, there was just not that you couldn't pitch to him or he was going to hit a home run on you.
The thing about baseball, people have conversations with me about baseball, like why is Mike Trout not more popular? There's all these kind of surrounding questions about baseball. It's because it's very difficult for a baseball player to dominate the game. If you're in hockey, Gretzky or Lemieux control the puck. If you're in basketball, LeBron controls the ball. If you're in soccer, it's messy. You know, you can control it. Clayton Kershaw can only pitch. He has no effect hitting. And Barry Bonds comes up once every four times. He might hit in the seventh, and then he has no effect on the end of the game. Barry Bonds, despite that existence, dominated baseball. Like, he just, anytime he was involved in an at-bat, that was the whole game was basically riding on that. He get a 3-run home run like nothing.
Did Willie Mays, did Babe Ruth, did anybody get walked with the bases loaded or with the bases? I mean, did that happen with those guys with any regularity the way it did with Bonds?
If it did, it's been lost to time. Yeah, Bonds was just, the one year when he was walked 120 times, intentionally. Not 120 walks. 120 just intentional walks. That's unbelievable. And his batting eye was incredible. You know, we talk about the walks and the home runs as being kind of the component stats, but if you watch an individual at bat, he just controlled the strike zone. He stood right on top of the plate. You could hit him, too. He would wear the thing on his – which is legal. You could wear the thing on his arm.
That was kind of bogus, though.
A little bogus, but you know what? Everybody uses gamesmanship, and I could live with it. And it would be an outside pitch, and he could just swat it over the – I mean, I can – there are a million Bonds memories. The two that stand out to me, two specific home run calls maybe or home run situations. One was he's in Yankee Stadium. And John Miller is calling it. I had John Miller on my podcast, and he is a peak. He's the best, the best. And he comes to Yankee Stadium. This is peak Bonds. And here's a pitch. Upper deck, but like in 0.1 seconds.
Hmm.
And the crowd doesn't know whether to boo or cheer or like, can I swear on this podcast?
No.
No, okay.
We can bleep you, though, if you do.
What the heck just happened? You know, like, how did the just like, wow, like this crazy noise. And John Miller goes, I just hit it to New Jersey. Like, as if nothing happened. And the other one was in the 2002 World Series.
I knew this one was one of his great clouts.
Actually, I'm going to give you a third one, too, before the Angels won. He's facing Eric Gagne in his prime. Eric Gagne was a beast, a beast. And by the way, he was the executive producer and the money man of that movie that I was just a part of called
Space. Is that right?
Yeah, Eric Gagne provided the money. Anyway, Eric Gagne would throw 98 with tail and whatever, and they're facing each other, and the Giants were down by two. But Gagne wasn't going to walk him. He's like, all right, you want to do it? You want to do it? And they're just mono. It's like eight pitches. And he hit it to straightaway center. And it was, you know, just this combination of forces, which was great. But the 2002 World Series, Bonds hits a home run to kind of right center. And you could see, if you watch on YouTube, you could pull it up. Tim Salmon, a great player in his own right. Tim Salmon mouths, you could see it on camera. That's the furthest ball I've ever seen hit.
That's because I proclaimed the exact same thing probably as Tim Salmon was saying it. It was just some crazy clout. And then a couple of days later, I was in Angel Stadium with all the rally monkeys,
yeah,
under sticks or whatever they called those annoying things. And I remember watching, what was his name? Scott Spezio. Scott Spezio's lazy fly ball right up the right field line. Like, well, that ball's not coming. Well, it's out. And then
he might have taken a couple. Anyway,
we're not judging.
I'm okay with it. So we're back to our exercise.
So we go in Bonds or Ruth?
We'll go Bonds because we're going to be iconoclast. Why not?
Okay.
So Bonds, Jordan, Ali. Now, Tiger?
I'd go Nicklaus. Nicklaus had more rivals, had a better class of rivals. I'm going to defer.
I'm not a golf expert.
Neither am I, but I mean, he was beating Tom Watson,
yeah.
Arnold
late
Palmer,
early Watson, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, he was going up by Gary Player. I mean,
inferior equipment, too, and putting up big scores. I mean,
yeah,
they were playing with hickory sticks.
And
okay.
He does have a scoreboard over Tiger as it stands.
Yes.
Too, so.
Okay, I'm okay with Jack.
I think, yeah, Nicklaus is so dominant. Yeah.
I'm going to throw something crazy at you.
Go ahead.
Serena Williams.
I don't think that's that crazy. I floated her name on Twitter.
I mean, she's definitely, if you look at, I think that she's more dominant than any male was. I can't think of a male tennis player that would be that. And I really, Steffi Graf the competition in female, I guess.
Yeah, I know. Serena is the most dominant.
And she's still dominating now. She's in, her mid-30s.
And she's the greatest female athlete.
Ever.
Yeah. I think that,
yeah.
I don't know that there's a lot of competition there. What about Michael Phelps? That one seems uninspired to me.
19 golds.
I know.
Some of them are a little cheap.
I mean, listen.
But it's 19 golds. It's pretty good.
I mean, how fringy are we going here? Are we really going to dip into swimming?
Did Jose Lean make the cut? Is he
all right,
get in?
Chico Lean. Listen, if I mean, our first, this is our first ever class. We're putting, this is who we're putting in. What about Bo? Bo can't make it.
Now we're in a hall of cool.
Yeah, you're right.
A hall of cools. And I wrote a piece for Grandland, which was the best / coolest baseball players that I had seen, and my list, my top three was Bonds, Ricky, Griffey, which in my lifetime, best and coolest, Ricky, unreal.
Yeah.
I mean, swagger up out of his nostrils, just like incredible.
Yeah, he was the best. Yeah.
He was the best.
He was really funny. But I, as I've said to you before, and I say again now,
yeah,
it's funny that history seems to have forgotten, and certainly you're no one to compete with when it comes to especially the advanced metrics,
yep,
applied to baseball. But I will say this. To my untrained eye, Randy Johnson's, like I said a second ago,
yeah,
five-year window,
yeah,
is comparable, if not superior, to anything Sandy Koufax did, Clayton Kershaw.
Randy Johnson's the best left-hander of all time.
But isn't that five-year window the most underappreciated chunk ever? I mean, that was a crazy – oh, well, if you just said Randy Johnson's the best left-hander, I guess you just said it all, since
well,
most
Koufax,
people would say Koufax.
Koufax isn't even top three left-handers.
Really?
I'll tell you a few reasons. Number one, Koufax didn't have longevity. He had that six-year period where he was God, And before that, he was nothing. And after that, he retired. Now, he's at a disadvantage because he couldn't have Tommy John surgery and come back. I understand that, but we can't do hypotheticals. Ted Williams went to the war. I'm sorry, Ted Williams. You're wonderful. I can't do anything with that. Koufax has these 6 years. Johnson's six best years are better than Koufax's six best years. And he had like 13 other really good seasons. In fact, if I'm going number two lefty of all time, it's probably Lefty Grove, which is like, you know, almost ancient baseball history, but he was tremendous. You can make a case for Warren Spahn. Steve Carlton was a wonderful, but that's somebody who was like, okay, we knew a little bit about Steve Carlton. Yeah, Johnson, the best pitchers of all time to me, I'm probably going Clemens, Maddox, Walter Johnson, and then maybe Randy Johnson.
Yeah. So I'm not too far off.
No, Randy Johnson was unbelievable.
I'm surprised that...
And it's in the middle of steroids already. He's putting up these numbers, by the way.
I'm also surprised you said Clemens, number one.
Well, by the numbers. The thing is, you want to look at both peak and career. So Clemens had kind of these two mini peaks. One of them was he was clearly juiced out of his mind. It was like the Blue Jays and on period. But then he also had this like one stretch with the Red Sox where he was a killer. And Maddox's two best seasons were 94 and 95. That's when guys like their thumbs were juiced. Like it was unreal at that time. And he was, you know, way to
buy.
Unreal.
I do often cite 94 and the the lead story certainly for you as an Expos lover.
How can you tell?
Is that team? Well, maybe your T-shirt says Carter and Dawson and Raines and Staub, and someday your friend Tim Raines will get in.
Thank you. Well, it's got to be next summer.
Oh, that's right.
The last ballot.
You are leading the way. Let's see just how much juice Jonah Carey has. If he can complete the feat, yes, he appears in the upcoming movie Spaceman about Bill Lee with Josh Duhamel. Make sure you check that out, if only to see the cameo.
August 19th.
From Jonah Carey, but let's see really what kind of impact you've had on the sports world. If you can get your friend Raines into the Hall of Fame, that'll
be something. The guy who's his rep, and we're friends, he emailed me and said, okay, he officially handed the campaign to me. He said, give me all the media contacts. Like, let's just do this thing. And, in fact, after this show, that's probably what I'm going to do. I have a little spare time.
Well, my high watermark for me, the things that I've achieved, what's my greatest achievement in this seat is about a decade ago, I got Pete Carroll and Rick Neuheisel on the phone simultaneously in front of the Victory Bell game, UCLA and USC, and they agreed on my show to both wear their home jerseys. You know my love of uniforms. And
wow.
Get them to return to wearing their home jerseys to play one another.
That's cool.
And sign off on both taking 15-yard delay of game penalties. I mean, it's all downhill since then. I think my career says as much.
Well, those are two of the most beautiful jerseys in college football. I'm a big fan. I love the baby blue, and we were Trojan season ticket holders because my wife went to grad school there, and so I was there for Reggie Bush and Carson Palmer and all that stuff.
Now we got a team playing in there on Sundays as well.
We do.
About that.
We're still working on this thing. So
yes,
we've got five, right?
We've got Jordan, Ali, Bonds or Ruth. We'll keep that one open. And you know what? Tweet us. What should be the hashtag there? Hall of All? Do we like that?
I like that.
Hall of All, hashtag Hall of All, and let us know your thoughts, and feel free to attach at Jonah Carey as well and let him know your thoughts too, especially if he's the one giving the bad ideas. I say Nicholas, Serena, we're already getting very fringy. We're not going to have hockey.
We're not going to have hockey.
Well, I mean, we'll have it eventually, but I mean, are we going to put Gretzky or Lemieux in?
Jeez.
Lemieux was the best. I mean, I don't know how many times we have to because I shout it doesn't make it so, but trust me, it's so. And then there are also people in the New England area that want Four's name to be mentioned too. But let's move on to NFL then, at least. Here's what that one
That's
comes
a
down
tough
to
one.
For me. Brady, Montana, Lawrence Taylor, the unquestioned best defensive player of all time. With a tip of the hat to Deion Sanders. I don't think all
I had a Deion Sanders poster in my room
he's
growing
pretty
up.
Interesting.
Half Falcons, half Braves.
Ooh,
really cool.
Nifty.
Yeah.
Nifty. And then and Jerry Rice. So those would be probably the four. And I know people would say Jim Brown, but that's the NFL. He was playing in the – people always beat me up on that one. But, I mean, you know, Jim Brown played in the NFL when there were like three teams in it.
You didn't have D Lyman running 4.5 40s, weigh 290 pounds. I mean, it was just a different
It really
thing.
Doesn't start until the Super Bowl era starts, everybody. Walter Payton, in fact. If I had to vote for a running back, if I had to put a running back in, I'd put Payton in over Jim Brown. But then, of course, I never saw Jim Brown play with my own two eyes, so it's hard for me really to fully weigh in on that. All right, we could do a football guy. I'm not putting Phelps in, not in our first class. Not in our first.
By making it six, you've really tightened it up. Like I really have to.
What do you want? You want 10? Then you get Lemieux and Gretzky. That
works. Fine. Let's do that. So I don't have to fight with you. Gretzky and Lemieux are both in. And Gaston Gingras.
And
Gretzky, Lemieux, Brady, and Montana. And we're going to put Bonds and Ruth in, and that's our class. Oh, we don't have a basketball player. Oh, we do have a basketball player, Jordan.
I think LeBron really deserves to be in. But then again, so maybe does Lou Alcindor / Kareem Abdul-Jabbar. And do we have to put in, if we're putting out Lee, and do we put Tyson in? Do we put Sugar Ray Robinson in? Now this has yielded more questions than answers. I don't know where to go, but MVP whispered a question in my ear into the headset while you were talking. Not Pedro Martinez in your list of all-time.
I'm very objective about everything. I love Pedro. I love Pedro personally. I've gotten to know him. I went and did a stand-up during the All-Star game, suited up. Oh, this is blah, 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 blah. And Pedro was right behind me. And so I finished my thing, and I went over and talked to him. I was with Harold Reynolds and Brian Kenny, and I was wearing a red tie, and it had little heads on it, Pedro Martinez heads on my tie, and I was talking to Pedro Martinez, and Pedro was amazed by it. And Harold said, and I know him a little bit from MLB, he said, can we get you on the air so you can be wearing the tie right now? So I have no objectivity, except that I do have objectivity, because Pedro didn't have the extended run. He started getting hurt toward, you know, that end of his career. He had like eight or nine. He had five tremendous seasons. He had eight or nine really good seasons, but he doesn't have the longevity of Clemens or Maddux.
All right. And no Jim Bibby either. All right. Disappointing. All right. Let's move on. So there's our start. But I am curious in cobbling this thing together. I do want to cobble this thing together and figure out what our inaugural class is. And then let's figure out after that group two and group three. I think this will be a fun little project for us. Now let's move on to, you mentioned Grantland and our mutual pal, Bill Simmons, of course, ran that. I'm sure you've talked about this on the great Jonah Carey podcast, and legitimately, it is great, and it covers all manner of subjects. Jonah is the Swiss Army knife of conversationalists, not unlike our pal Matt Money Smith. These are what I would call Renaissance.
That's a compliment. Money's great.
Really conversant on just about anything you want to yap about at any given moment. But so I'm sure you've talked about it on your show. And I have heard it too. That's dismissive. Like, I'm sure you've talked about it. You know, I only have so many hours.
You do have children.
Grantland, what's your takeaway? It's now been what? A little over a year.
A little less than a year. It was October 30th of last year. It was a great opportunity for us. It was 4 years, and some really talented people came together who were also just wonderful, salt-of-the-earth kind of people. And I have nothing but positive things to say. It either launched or helped further propel a lot of careers.
Certainly seems to be.
Senior citizen by the standards of the website. It was Charlie Pierce, Simmons. I was the third oldest person there. I was older than the editor-in-chief.
Huh.
And they recruited, a lot of, for lack of a better term, kids, 22 and 23-year-olds. Rembert Brown is now a star. Robert Mays is one of the best football writers in America. These were kids out of college, and they just killed it, crushed it with the opportunity that they had. And so I just looked at it as I was like the, you know, I was the Isaiah Crowell of this team. I was like, give me the first, I'll play first and second down, and I'll just carry the load, and I'll get you 4.3 yards a carry or whatever. But, like, you know, the people who are just, like, coming up in superstars, like, they'll kill it and whatever. And so I filled my little Isaiah Crowell role, including getting embroiled in controversy for some reason. No, I didn't do that. But
I was wondering why, of all the names that you might have summoned to invoke there, Isaiah Crowell.
Because it's random, because I want to go random, and because I want to impress you with my limited football knowledge, Dave Damashek, and because all the football players that I know are literally on my League of Leagues team.
Go Greg Pruitt in that case. You want to dip back into history. That impresses me.
Greg Pruitt. So anyway,
do you know that the Cleveland Browns had two guys, both black guys, both running backs, one wore 34, the other one wore 43, last name Pruitt, P-R-U-I-T-T. There are other spellings for Pruitt, but both of these guys spelled it that way, unrelated. At the same time, in Los Angeles, on the Rams, two defensive players, both surname, both white guys, both named Youngblood, unrelated.
I did know about the Youngblood thing.
Two guys on the Dallas Cowboys, same time. Pearson spelled the same way.
I thought you were going to say there were two Septiennes. I was excited.
Drew and Preston Pearson, unrelated. I don't know why I'm the only person who is as fascinated by that as
That's why you've built a football empire, Dave Damashek. It's with the minutia like that.
I think that's I agree. What is your
Granlund was great is the answer.
It was great. Yeah, so we moved on from that a little bit. But yeah, it is good at minimum to see that everybody seems to have moved on and it validates.
And Simmons has a new website with Ringer and he's doing great things, and some people went over to MTV News and some people just went off on their own. I'm on my own. Zach Lowe's at ESPN on his own. Barnwell, Wesley Morris, who's a Pulitzer Prize winning journalist, is at the New York Times. It's great. It's all great.
Is it, in a weird way, is it not that you're looking to be contentious about this, but do you feel like it somehow validates and therefore will be for decades now a thorn in the side of ESPN decision makers to say, boy, we let all that talent go?
Nope, because I am a realist about the industry, and if you want to know how sports works, it works like this. Live programming makes money, and that's about it. The rest of us are window dressing. I do not believe myself to be valuable. I am a talking head in a sea of talking heads, and a lot of people could do my job, probably close to as well. I just try the best that I can, but people watch college football. That's why ESPN exists.
Well, I mean, I just try to lean on what I got going for me, and that's the moneymaker.
Yeah, that's right.
The handsome.
I don't have those looks. And so I just try to wear novelty clothing, and that's pretty much how we do it.
Where was I going next? Do you want? Listen, Jonah will whip me in whatever you have cooked up, but let's get to it. Let's get to our so-called surprise game show.
See it.
Even though I'm calling for it.
Okay.
That's the part of the surprise, is that Dave calls for it. Oh, here we go.
Oh, yeah. Here we go, guys. So, as Dave said, it's our surprise random game show.
I do not know, just so you know. I'm a man of great honor,
yep.
Jonah. I do not know the category. We're going to go back and forth. One,
okay.
One. Oh, by the way, you got to sit in. One thing I'm envious of you is that you got to visit Onrate and O'Toole.
I love those guys.
Man, really
they're
great.
Such good guys.
What they're doing is really hysterical.
I really like, you know, they reformatted a couple times and there's politics involved or whatever, but they found a great niche for themselves. By the way, my podcast, because you mentioned the diversity of it, I had the biographer of Ruth Bader Ginsburg on the show, and not long after that I had Onrate O'Toole and also musicians. And I'm like, it's just, that is amazing. So The fact that I could just, I'm interested in this. The person agrees. Shaquille O'Neal agreed to sit with me. It was fantastic.
Produced by, if you ever heard of a little cult podcast named Daves of Thunder from about 5-6 years ago, Blaster Girl is the
Katie
producer.
Levine.
Blaster Girl produces that.
Animal lover.
That's right.
Yeah.
Lovely person.
She is.
All right, get to it.
All right, getting to it.
What was Feeney's thing? Racing cars with her? He wants a race car? I don't remember. Anyway, go ahead.
So, Summer Olympics going on right now. There are 39 different sports in the
Summer Olympics. This is how you challenge us?
This is your challenge. See how much you're going to be
one.
Challenged.
I don't like this one that much, but all right.
39 different sports in the Summer Olympics. How many can you name?
Can I have a paper and a pen too?
I'm surprised no, you can't. They're only 39.
All right. Do I just start reeling them off?
That's
do
the total.
Do them separately?
That's the total. Huh?
Go one by one here.
One by one. Okay.
And are we – can I say – all right, well, Jonah goes first.
So, wait, I have a question. Is swimming just swimming, or is it the 400-meter medley, da-da-da-da-da?
Oh, that it is, must be that. That must be what you're doing, right?
No, that covers it, yeah.
Okay.
Swimming is just swimming.
I don't like this question.
Okay, I'll just say swimming to start since I said swimming literally 8 times.
Basketball.
Archery.
So I can say track and field, and that gets everything? Well, now I don't know what – I feel like now we're finished. Haven't we named everything?
Handball.
I like team handball. That's a
good one. Have you ever played it?
No, I'd
it's
love
fun.
To.
It's fun. It's like basketball, and you're running. It's like soccer. I don't know. It's great.
Of all the Olympic sports out there, that's the that are not played in the U.S.,
yeah.
I think that one seems like the most fun. I'll go with volleyball.
They play soccer in the Olympics.
Sure. Yeah. They also play golf in the Olympics.
Do they?
Oh. I think it's new this year, isn't it? Or is that true? Am I right about that? How many can there be left once we got track and field? Doesn't that knock out everything?
feel like it knocks out. I'm literally blanking already. This is a problem.
Yeah, you guys have eight.
Oh, I got one.
39.
Okay, I got one.
So you're almost there.
This is a disaster. By the way, I really don't like the Olympics. I never watch it. I think that the oppression of it is terrible. I don't think people should build publicly financed stadiums. I think the Olympics are full of garbage. I hate the Olympics. Perfect. I'm glad I'm disqualified.
I kind of agree.
Screw you, Olympics.
I kind of agree. While rowing will be my winning answer.
Fine.
That was a weird question. Kent Brown behind the glass. Shane.
The only thing, here's the thing. I have much respect for people who spend their whole lives, they're 6 years old, they train toward a goal, that's fine. The institution of it, the IOC, the building,
yeah,
the stadiums,
right.
It's disgusting. I can't stand it. There's no, Rio has so many problems, and this is what they're going to spend their money on. The favelas are a disaster. And by the way, that's the case anywhere in Los Angeles or London. There's poverty everywhere, there's problems everywhere, and this is just catering to God knows what. It makes me sick.
I do
I
agree,
really like
and I want to join you on Mount Pius, and I don't mean that as a shot.
No,
I
do. Whether or not you
I
do.
Really do. It is disgusting what they do, but I can't help when I flip it on and you get sucked into.
I also don't have
some of the human drama
because I'm Canadian. Also, it's not like we dominate the Olympics. Like yeah. I was excited about Ben Johnson. That's the end of my dream. So, I don't even have the rah-rah patriotism thing. Like I don't have close ties to Americans. I got excited when the Hungarian swimmer won because my dad was born in Hungary, so that side of the family. I have a little bit of Hungary thing in me.
It's not national pride or anything. I'm.
But a lot of people
competition. Yeah.
And the other thing is that it's packaged really poorly, so that we can't watch it live. God forbid we should watch
sports
live. We have the internet, NBC. We can see these results.
What I always say about the Olympics, and in fact I haven't said it in 2 years now since the Winter Games, it's sports for non-sports fans. That's really what it is, because the rules that you normally would apply don't here. We want that in prime time. Any sports fan would, of course, know the answer to that, but there's these fringy events played by people you don't know, and yet, ironically, everybody turns into an expert after watching for about 20 minutes. Oh, well, you know, on her sow cow, her legs came apart a little bit there. I'm going to have to deduct a few points on that one. You know, everybody's an expert on who's the best and what the proper technique in sports that they've never watched before.
Well, so they said – somebody asked NBC this exact question, why don't you show the events live? And they said the reason is because that it's not sports for non-sports fans. And then they went on to say by which we mean women. That's what they said. Okay, so first of all, that's spectacularly offensive. And secondly, so they decide that women are only interested in prepackaged that has to look like reality TV. No, women still want to see people swim against each other and kick each other's ass, or soccer, or archery, or what? How does that work? Are you psychoanalyzing 50% of the world's population now and their sports proclivities? It's insane.
Yeah, well, I'm with you. You make a compelling argument. By the way, they also do diving and they do gymnastics. How about those two for Damashek?
Well, I'm just glad you won for Team USA. We have Canada invading our country here for the Olympic battle. We figured maybe if Hank was around, it could have been England, Canada, and USA.
I see where you're motivated.
Nonetheless, USA.
It's a Carl Lewis, Ben Johnson thing. We both did steroids. Sheck didn't get caught, so he wins.
We're not going to put Carl Lewis into our Hall of Fame.
Hell
first
no.
Class. No.
No.
Certainly
no,
not first
no.
Class. All right. So a couple more things. Do we have black tie? Because I really would like Jonah to weigh in on the second annual film festival with Black Tie. What would you say if I told you this was a guy? What if I told you that there was a guy who thinks he's a cinephile, but he's only seen 14 movies his entire life? Maybe I'm understating it a little bit, but he has a lot of conditions on what he will and will not see.
Okay.
What would you advise him if we've decided this year for the Olympics he has to watch 8 movies, sports movies.
Sports movies.
What movies would you recommend?
Literally last night, there was a conversation in a bar about the best sports movies of all time, which I partook in. So the biggies are, you got to go Rocky.
Okay. We're looking long and hard at that one.
Okay. Hoosiers.
I want Hoosiers on this list, yes.
So now we're going to get into like these are sports movies, but they're kind of bigger movies. So for instance, Bang the Drum Slowly. And Brian's Song. Both of those, like, I don't know how you want to handle those. They're kind of a little tear jerky, a little this, but they're certainly great movies.
Ooh, you know what? Brian's Song is great because it'll be great to find out if it makes Black Tie cry. I want to see that. Let's make sure we have Brian's Song in there.
It makes everybody cry.
I know, but the idea of Black Tie sitting alone in his apartment weeping delights me.
For 2 hours. Raging Bull.
Ooh, yeah, Raging Bull.
Raging Bull's phenomenal. That's the thing is we're thinking more in terms of, you know, Bull Durham or whatever, but the best sports movies are just movies that
have sports in it. Well, he should see the most iconic, not necessarily great, but the ones that everybody knows, the classics. For instance, we made him watch last year Raiders of the Lost Ark, and he didn't like it.
I was literally just on a film podcast that's dedicated to film, and they said, what movie do you want to choose of all movies? I said, let's choose Office Space. That's a lot of fun. Great. Everybody loves Office Space. And then we just started talking about other movies. I said, Raiders of the Lost Ark might be my favorite movie of all time. I like a lot of different kinds of movies. And one of the guys says, I didn't care for it. First of all, I only watched it like a few weeks ago. Okay. And secondly, he didn't care for it. What? How? What? I don't understand.
You need to be removed from
civilization. I mean, blasted off into the sun.
Who doesn't like Raiders of the Lost Ark? The aforementioned David Feeney will make a very compelling case, and a lengthy one too, if you ask him to, about why Temple of Doom is the best of the three. Often ridiculed.
Because it's clearly my least favorite. I mean, clearly.
Rare is it that somebody can swing your opinion on something that is subjective, and he will swing your opinion on it.
So we're going to go with the classics. So if we're sticking with classics, we could maybe put Brian Song in, but Rocky, Hoosiers, Raging Bull, you know, which of the baseball movies do you want? There's The Natural. There's Field of Dreams.
I think The Natural.
Yeah, I would say The Natural. Natural's a good book, too.
And The Natural, well, it's funny. We were just talking about that, and a lot of people in here hadn't read the book, so they don't know the difference. Mm-hmm.
I took baseball literature in college. That's true. That was a course.
That's the last question for you, Joan. I don't know if we've kibitzed about this before. Oh, yeah, but we got a wrap here. But League of Leagues, I also wanted to talk about. But
we're going to talk about it on my podcast, too. So your listeners
so listen to the Jonah Carey podcast.
At length.
We're doing a home and home, and we'll do the League of Leagues conversation there. So that allows me this final question for you. What's your hypothesis about why Hollywood hates Pittsburgh sports teams so much? Let me make the case for you.
Okay.
You mentioned The Natural. Well, first of all, you have In Heaven Can Wait. Joe Pendleton, you remember the picture with Warren Beatty, and you know, Joe Pendleton is the quarterback.
Yep.
He's on the Rams, you know, and they play the Steelers in the Super Bowl, and the Rams beat them. Well, that's rubbish. You know, the movie's made in like 1980. No, the Rams.
Prime Steelers territory.
So they weren't beating them. So, all right, that's a small dig at the Steelers.
Okay.
There's the movie Black Sunday, based around Super Bowl X, but in this alternate universe, the game is disrupted by a terrorist attack. perpetrated by the Goodyear blimp.
I'm now realizing the other movies that you're going to mention, which is Sudden Death.
Why are the Steelers doing it? Sudden Death. Why?
And by the way, Sudden Death has my single favorite scene in any movie of all time, which is Jean-Claude Van Damme-ishek against the mascot of the Pittsburgh Penguins.
I know.
Who's, you know, it's a terrorist inside the, it's fed, it's a comedy.
What kind of more, I mean, symbolic or literal? The Hollywood kills the Pittsburgh Penguin mascot.
And of course, the most anti-Pittsburgh movie of all time is The Dark Knight Returns.
Right. They pretend it's Gotham, but they're wearing black and gold. Now,
Heinz
I know those
Ward
Steelers.
Is the return
they
man.
Blow the field
Heinz
up.
Ward is wearing Ward 86 with silver and gold on, or gold and black on it. And running, and he's the only one who survives.
And
Roethlisberger
natural,
dies.
When Roy Hobbs hits the home run, who's he hit it off of? The Pittsburgh Pirates.
I did not even realize that.
And
you're right. Wow.
And Roy Hobbs hits the ball into the lights, and then they blow up. And while he's rounding the bases and his teammates are celebrating, dangerous shards of glass are raining down on the outfielders and, you know, maybe causing serious injury.
Dark Knight Rises, not Dark Knight Returns. And yes, to your point about serious injury.
But now you see. Why would they hate a sleepy burg like that? Or should I take it as a compliment that this is the beacon of sports success and so better you take down?
I think it is, because if you think about it, if you ask an athlete, you can bring Ike, you can bring MJD or whoever in here, and I think that they would say that some of them really like being booed, because you're not booed until you're feared, you know, and respected. And I think that there's something to that. Hollywood is just booing the city of Pittsburgh en masse because they're terrified of Pittsburgh's
sports glory. Because they hate us
because
they ain't us.
That's exactly
something
right.
like that. Jonah Carey, I don't hate you, even though I'm not you. I'm proud of all your success in
right
the last
you,
decade.
Buddy.
To watch, really, when we were doing that show and I heard tale of, you know, an ESPN.com page 2 writer. Oh, I think he might be your speed. You might really get on with him. We had him on the show. He quickly became a weekly visitor there. And on all our endeavors, we love to get Jonah Carey in here. He's one of the great minds. Like I say, not just about baseball, but about all things. Well, 8 years ago, you were doing stock analysis, too, on top of everything else.
For 11 years, I wrote the flagship stock market column for Investors Business Daily, and I lived in Los Angeles. And then the sports – I wanted to do sports stuff, but there was nothing available in the 90s, except the only person who was writing online was pretty much Bill Simmons, and eventually – kind of did something vaguely similar to that path.
Now he's a movie star, he's a writer, he's a TV star.
Oh, I was on this thing called Brockmire, too, which is this Hank Azaria show where they flew me, Joe Buck, Brian Kenny, and Tim Kirchin down, and we acted on the television show. That's IFC in January. That's going to be super fun.
What a name dropper. We've lost him now. We've lost him to show business.
Wait, where's my fluffer?
The Jonah Carey podcast, start there, go or at Jonah Carey, tweets all his stuff out that way. But the books, the like I say, the podcast, MLB Network, and so on. Here he is, everybody. Jonah Carey, what a pleasure to see you once again.
Thank you, sir.
All right, and that's it then. I guess we'll walk now. What more are we going to do? Make sure you hit us up. Hashtag Hall of All. Let us know who belongs in that inaugural class. I'm going to keep it to 6. No offense to Jonah Carey. I think we should keeps it nice and rigid. Keeps you on your toes. We'll be back with more Huey and Applesauce later on. In the meantime, now you got to do the music again. I hope that was worth it to you. You try to rush me, and I'm not going to be rushed by you. Check it out on iTunes, NFL.com/podcast. Also, don't forget to check out our video show from the Coliseum with Akbar Baja Biamila, a journey through South Central where he grew up. That's cool. Then we land. We talk to Maurice Jones-Drew in the Coliseum. And we talk to the first overall pick of the 2016 NFL Draft, Jared Goff, a nice fellow there. Great stuff. Make sure you check that out on NFL.com/podcast. Back later on. Thin Slice of Heaven.